Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 12th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. I guess it means Friday is Friday the 13th. This week, Matt Becker from New Brew Thursday shares his small batch sour beer blending experiment. Steve joins me in the studio to sample some tart and tasty brews. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our 2012 Brewers Logbooks are in the house and going out the door. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And we have a Basic Brewing radio and video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget the amazon.co.uk link on there, too. And we also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and you can find the Android app on Amazon as well. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app, too. We got a good long interview this week, so I want to get to it. But before I do, I want to read an email that I got from the American Homebrewers Association. It goes something like this. It says, last year, the Wisconsin Department of Revenue determined that under existing Wisconsin law, homebrew cannot be consumed outside the home where it was produced. Now, this is Wisconsin. This is like beer country up there. The American Homebrewers Association is supporting an effort by the Wisconsin Homebrewers Alliance to resolve the issue. Thanks to the efforts of the Wisconsin Homebrewers Alliance, State Senator Michael Ellis and Representative Dean Coffert have agreed to sponsor LRB 3101, which, if passed, would lift current restrictions that prohibit homebrew from being transported outside of the home where it was made. It's amazing that battles like this are still being waged across the country. So if you live in Wisconsin, contact your state legislator and let him or her know that you are behind LRB 3101 and want to free the homebrew from its birthplace. This restriction, of course, prohibits brewers from taking beer to club meetings, entering contests, or just sharing with friends outside the home. You know, you can't take a beer to the football game at your friend's house. Crazy. Contact your state legislator to support LRB 3101 in Wisconsin and get this silly situation fixed. And join the American Homebrewers Association to keep up to date on things like this. And we appreciate the information from them. One more note, there is a new Basic Brewing video episode out there since we last spoke on this podcast. Steve and I step up the recipe of a Mr. Beer Kit by doing a partial mash. So you want to check that out. Okay, a while back I was contacted by Matt Becker, who offered to send me the results of an experiment that he brewed comparing commercial sour culture blends and one that he made on his own. So Steve and I got together with Matt to check it out. Well, Matt Becker, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
James, thanks for having me.
And in the studio, in person, Steve Wilkes.
Live and in person.
Live and in person.
That's right.
In real life.
The only two requirements we have for the show. Well, Matt, first I guess we ought to introduce you. You are part of the New Brew Thursday crew.
I am indeed. The newest member.
The newest of the New Brew Thursday crew. And do you have a special power? You know, is it like Power Rangers or you know, the Transformers or something? Or do you have the certain power on the podcast that's yours and yours alone?
Yeah, well, you know, no, Steve's like the he's the main draw in personality. John is, you know, has his own personality. He also handles most of the technical aspect. I'm just kind of there, I guess. They needed a third guy, and they're like, "Hey, you know something about beer, and we like him, so you be on the show."
You're the eye candy.
Exactly, exactly. I'm the pretty one. I am the pretty one. No, well, it started off because like John has been homebrewing for just over a year. Steve's been homebrewing on and off for about the same amount of time, but I was the one who was really intensely into it. So I'm the one who kind of brings the more technical knowledge aspect to the show. So, you know, that's kind of my contribution, I think.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And you you also do, along with the video podcast, you do the NBT Brewing podcast at nbtbrewing.com.
Yeah, when we first started, they wanted to, you know, integrate homebrewing into New Brew Thursday somehow, and you know, we had talked about it, and it, you know, they had done some, you know, they did a homebrews around the world show where they just had, or around the country where they just had people send homebrews to them, and they talked about them, and then we also did the homebrew contest with Bison Brewing, which was very successful, as a matter of fact. Andrew, who won, just brewed this wonderful, wonderful pale ale with New Zealand hops, which I love. Mm. And so, you know, that there was that. And then we finally decided that we wanted to do something just homebrew specific. And so John and I got together and decided to do an audio podcast. And then a good friend of ours, Jason Harris, also joined in. And so we do that once a week. And it's nice just because, you know, most homebrewing podcasts that you run into, Basic Brewing Radio, for example, are very topical. You know, this month we're doing, you know, this, you know, we're doing a show about mashing, or we're doing a show about, you know, this other specific topic. You know, we decided to do a show around individual beers themselves. And so every week we do a specific beer of ours. Every once in a while we have guests, and we just, you know, talk about that beer and, you know, the techniques that we use, the ingredients that we used. And then there's also lots of side conversations and, you know, swearing and stuff like that. So, you know.
So, and you were also into small batch brewing as well.
Yeah, that's kind of become like my little niche that I've filled. I don't like doing 5 gallons of a beer if I'm not sure about it, frankly. And I was looking at my equipment one day and I was like, well, I can do, you know, all grain in 2.5 gallon batches on my stovetop. And, you know, it takes the same amount of time, but, you know, if a beer doesn't turn out very well, then there isn't a whole lot of it to get rid of. And, you know, I've had a couple of those, I have to say. But no, it just kind of it perfecting that 2.5 gallon system kind of became like a goal of mine. And it, I don't know, especially, you know, on the internet, it helps if you have something to talk about that a lot of people aren't talking about, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it just kind of became a thing I like to work on. I started a blog, and I did it for about 2 months, and then I stopped, you know, like most blogs do. I figure I have about the average lifespan for a blog, but hopefully I'll be getting that back up here in the next couple of months. That's smallbatchbrewing.wordpress.com for anyone who wants to check out the 3 posts I have on there now.
Now that we know you, you sent some beers all the way from California.
Yeah, I did.
What do we got here? We got 4 bottles. We got A, B, C, and D.
This was I love sour beers, like most, you know, beer geeks do, and there are a few different options as far as how to sour your beer out there, and I didn't know which one to choose, which one would work. You know, you look up brewing sour beers online, and there's a lot of, you know, just do a clean primary fermentation and then add bugs later, you know, add bugs from, you know, bottle dregs in the secondary, you know, there's all these different things. And so one thing I wanted to do was just try the commercial sour cultures that were out there and just see which one worked best for me. So I brewed up 10 gallons of very simple blonde ale, basically, and I split it into 4 2.5 gallon carboys, and I used 4 different cultures. I used the White Labs culture, which is 655, I believe. Mm-hmm. I used Y-Yeast's Lambic Blend, which has a number, I'm sure.
3278, I believe.
Yep. Ah, thank you. I used the Bug Farm 5 from East Coast Yeast, which is tiny. It's basically one guy, you know, making yeast blends in his garage in New Jersey, I believe. Mm-hmm. Huh. And then I didn't have a fourth one. I couldn't find a fourth commercial culture, so I made one of my own. It was basically I needed a fourth culture, and I had a bunch of sour beer, and I had a bunch of buddies who liked sour beer, so it basically became an excuse to drink a bunch of sour beers and pour the dregs into a starter. So, you know.
Oh, that's a party.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And it was one of those things I was like, even if this sucks, this is a great night. So, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, and it's only you're only talking about 2.5 gallons of beer or less than that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what the heck?
Right.
I have to admit that I did the dregs of an Orval and started that up. And maybe I'll send you a couple of cases of that.
Will I enjoy this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
No,
yeah.
It's an interesting thing. If you have a foot fetish, you'll love it. But I don't know. We need to check it out again because we haven't tried it in a long time. But it had a rough start in the bottle, I have to say.
Notes of toe jam.
So yeah. So I don't know if that was if I accidentally infected the starter and there was something, you know, just in the air in my house that tastes like that, or if that's what you get when you do a starter from Orval dregs. But you know, that's a show in itself. Maybe that's our one beer
yeah.
a week show
yeah.
right there.
There you go.
Although I don't know how we could spend 30 minutes talking about the flavor of feet. the nuances of the flavor of feet.
It's a whole different podcasting category.
Yeah. I'd say this is more of a wool sock kind of aroma.
Yeah.
I'm not getting any cotton off of it.
I'm getting a little bit of callus in the front end and pigeon toe on the end.
Okay, you're creeping me out.
Hey, we've gone 10 minutes and we haven't drank any beer. So
that's a problem.
Why don't you put this one over by the sink, because Matt says that there may be a little spewage.
Yeah, they were aggressively carbonated is a gentle way of putting it, I suppose.
We'll see if Vesuvius happens over there in the sink. Can you work that thing?
I'm struggling.
Yeah, I have another. Ah, there it goes. I have another. He's using the opener that you actually see on the opening of Basic Brewing Video, the old fashioned wooden handled one.
Oh, cool.
We didn't get spewage.
No.
Now this one is the White Lab 655 Belgian Sour Mix 1. And while we're tasting this, why don't you take us through the malt bill and you know what your base beer was all about, and then the technique that you used for pitching all this stuff.
Honestly, the whole thing was pretty simple. I mean, the malt bill was, 65% Pilsner malt, 15% red wheat malt, 15% flaked wheat, and 5% flaked oats. And then I did an ounce of German Pearl at 60 minutes for about 16 IBUs. I believe it was a 90-minute boil. And then just cooled it down, put it into each individual carboy, and I just pitched the bugs themselves directly. I didn't do any kind of clean primary fermentation or anything like that. And basically I just, you know, pitched, let it ferment, and it sat there for 8 months.
Wow.
Yeah. That was my next question, was how old are these beers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that surprised me about this. I think it was because these pitches are all designed for 5 gallons, and I pitched them into 2.5. I think everything happened a lot faster than it would if it was in a normal 5 gallon batch. Mm-hmm. But I had pellicle formation in like 6 weeks, and I ended up tasting them at 8 months, and I thought they were beautiful and they were ready to go. So,
Oh, this is very nice. It's kind of a bright. Sourness or tart. I don't know if it's tart. Maybe it's not the sourest beer I've ever had, or maybe my palate's you know, dulled by the La Folie that I've been drinking, but
no, that's actually one thing that we noticed with, it should be noted that we did a show on this on, MBT Brewing, that hasn't been released yet. That'll be released, about middle of January. I don't know when this show is going up, but,
tomorrow.
No. Okay. But yeah, no, that's one thing we noticed is that the White Labs was by far the least aggressive in any way. You know, it was light. It was, you know, had a little bit of tartness. It had some nice, like, pineapple-y fruitiness. And that was about it, really. I think that one may have blossomed a bit more, given a bit more time. But the others were, I thought, were ready. So I figured I'd just go for it, you know.
There's just a tiny bit of a dark barnyard kind of aroma to it. But in the mouthfeel, there's a teeny bit of, I don't want to say sliminess, but of kind of a viscosity sort of. Do you get that?
Yeah, I do. I also really get the pineapple quite a lot, and that's nice. And it's maltier than I expected it to be. I don't know why I say that, but I guess I was expecting something more like a goose or something, you know, that was just really cutting.
Right.
Maybe just from the way it looks.
Right.
Now, this, like I said, this was 20% flake grains. I did that originally just to provide some, you know, longer chain, you know, starches for the bugs to chew on over time. So I think that's probably one reason that it has more of that viscosity, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and the oats too.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
I put Hall & Oates in one of mine, but it was a soulful beer.
It was a man eater.
It was a man eater. That's right.
Did you watch out? It will chew you up.
Yeah. You don't look old enough to know that song, Matt.
Oh, bands I like covered it. It's okay.
That's kind of a backhanded compliment, isn't
it? Yeah.
I know there was a mustache in that group somewhere, but
yeah, this is very good. This is very drinkable. What's the ABV on this?
The original Gravity was 10.53. I didn't take individual readings for every single one, even though I probably should have in the spirit of experimentation. One thing about my experiments is that they're not particularly scientific. So I estimated the final coming out to about 10.03, 10.02. So to put it right around 6.5, 6.7%, right around there.
Yeah, there's a teeny bit of alcohol heat at the end of it. But it's tasty. Very tasty. Yeah. I'd drink that.
You just did.
Shall we rinse?
Let's rinse.
Now, did you said that you just pitched the culture itself on the commercial blends, right?
Right.
And you made a starter with your dregs.
Yeah, the dregs, I basically just made up 500 milliliters of a 1040 wort. It was really more just something to pitch all the dregs into more than anything, because I didn't have the wort in front of me. I did this about 2 weeks before I actually brewed the beer itself. So it was kind of just a place to put all the dregs in one place, you know? So
a storage locker for the...
Exactly.
A sanitary spit bucket, if you will.
Yeah, pretty much. One thing I did do, which I'm not sure if that was a good idea, I did put it on my stir plate for about 8 hours before I actually pitched it. So... I don't know. You'll see when you get to it, but I don't know if the extra oxygen was such a good idea. It's kind of odd in an interesting way, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah, this is the Y Yeast 3278 Belgian Lambic blend, and I have there's some info about this that I downloaded and printed from the internet. This blend contains yeast and bacteria cultures important to the production of spontaneously fermented beers of the Lambic region. Specific proportions of a Belgian-style ale strain, a sherry strain, two Brettanomyces strains, a lactobacillus culture, and a pediococcus culture produce the desirable flavor components of these beers as they are brewed in West Flanders. Propagation of this culture is not recommended and will result in a change of the proportions of the individual components. That's interesting. This blend will produce a very dry beer due to the super attenuated nature of the mixed cultures. So I guess you're not supposed to, even with a larger batch, you're not supposed to make a starter with this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would assume if you're doing 10 gallons and you just buy more of it, I guess, you know, but that was one thing I was talking about as far as the 2.5 gallon size is that definitely had, I don't know if this is a totally accurate representation of what these different cultures can do, mostly just because the pitching rates were much different than, you know, what they were built up for, I guess you could say. So
yeah, it's interesting. And I would assume that if you were to rack this small batch off and then, you know, pitch the dregs into a larger batch, you'd get a different beer because you're essentially making a starter using a small batch.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. What do you think?
I'm surprised at how different these are. These are really different beers.
Yeah.
And I have to say that at first on the second beer with the 3278 Belgian Lambic, when I first smelled it, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
The smell was like, oh, man, that's really in the barnyard.
Yeah.
A couple of sips down the road, though, and it's kind of grown on me. It tastes better than it smells, but now the smell's not bugging me.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
And then
that's a backhanded compliment.
Yeah. But I'm thinking that this is a beer, and it doesn't strike me as particularly sour. Does it, you guys?
That's actually one thing that we noticed on the show too was we noticed it was much, much funkier. It had much more of that, you know,
it's real
barnyard,
funky,
horsey thing, but it wasn't particularly sour.
Right. And so what I'm wondering is this a beer that needs to go 18 months? I mean, you know, before you get to that really, before it really expresses itself. That's we know that with all four of these, I would assume they will continue to change for some time. I
definitely think that they would, but like I said, they tasted good to me, so I just went for it.
Oh, no, they taste great. But see, to me, that's part of the fun of homebrewing is that you get to make a beer like this that is great at 3 months or 6 months or whatever, and yet it might be not necessarily better, but it'll be different a year from now.
Yeah, it just makes me wonder if I didn't bottle my Orval dreg beer too soon, you know what I mean? I should have left it in the primary for a lot longer just to evolve a little bit. I'm not very patient. That's my thing. That's why I don't make meads as much as I used to. It's just because you gotta wait.
Well, you get old, you can die at any time.
That's right. Doggone it.
Yeah, that's why you hear a lot about people who do sour beers. They do a lot of them because, you know, then at least you'll have one that's going to be turning up in, you know, like 3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, instead of staring at a carboy in the back of your closet for a year. You know?
Well, that's true. Did you see our video episode where we blended with the kombucha?
Yeah.
The instant sour beer right there.
Boy,
there you
it was.
Go. There you go.
Well, I quite like this beer. At first, I didn't like the bouquet, if I can so loosely call it that. Mm. And but at first, I really didn't care much for it. But, an ounce or two down the road, and I like it quite a bit.
It's a lot thinner than the first beer. But, on the aroma, it's more of the kind of dark funk barnyard kind of thing. It's not overpowering, but there's just kind of that,
This is not a gateway beer.
No,
this is
a challenging beer.
Yeah.
It's a bit more cerebral.
Yeah. This is not your wine cooler of sour beers, but the sourness, is tart, but can it be acidic without being sour? Does that make sense?
Well, it could have a degree of acidity, I suppose you could say. I think there's that like tart to sour threshold that you hit. You know, it's one of those things. It's like you don't know it until you run into it, you know, you have it and you're like, yeah, it's kind of tart, and you have a beer that's sour and you're like, yes, this is sour, and there's a line in there somewhere.
Maybe it's more astringent than there's some astringency at the very end that's kind of like, you know.
Now see, I had astringency in the first beer more.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So there you go.
You're obviously wrong.
I know. I've heard that more than once today.
Maybe you need a beer. So this is tasty. It's I have to say I prefer the first one. So far. What do you think?
I think
you prefer the second one? Really?
I think so. I would. We'd be a perfect Well, a couple at the park.
Well, there's half of each left. You know, after we finish recording, I know which one I'll go for. We just got to keep them in order. But that doesn't say, but the second one, the Y yeast is still it's still a good beer. It's very interesting. It's very very drinkable. I mean, unfortunately,
well, the difference is drinkability.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, nowadays, the word drinkable refers to watery.
Yeah,
you know, as does the word refreshing.
Yeah, I also get a graininess. Did I say that right? Graininess.
A grainy what?
Graininess.
Isn't that a cereal?
It is. It's grainy, and I like that. I get a sense of the taste of the grain.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't wear you out, you know? It's a, you know, how you can mm-hmm. you can drink some Lafleur, mm-hmm. and by the end of the first glass, you're like, ah, that was good, but man.
I had a bottle of Lafleur with dinner.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
That's really good, too.
You guys are just giving me beer in me now.
Well, we can send you some. We have access. So, believe it or not, you don't get the New Belgian beers out there?
Oh, no, we very much do, but they fly off the shelves so fast out here that it's not something that you come across easily. Well, you know, you have like about a week window before they get all snapped up, so...
Well, believe it or not, they had Lafleur, the 22-ounce bombers of Lafleur at Sam's Club in Fayetteville.
Nice.
So, yeah, and a pretty good price, too. This episode brought to you by Sam's Club.
And New Belgium, yes.
Renew today.
Well, man, if we got money every time we said Lafleur on this podcast.
Oh, I'm telling you.
We wouldn't want for anything.
Sponsorship.
Well, they don't need to sponsor because we say it so often.
Yeah, really.
Cheers, by the way. We haven't, we're clinking our plastic glasses here.
Well,
That I bought at Walmart.
Well, I can
with
do
my great value buttery smooth crackers that we're having here.
Say cheers.
Cheers. There cheers. We go. Sound of it. He's the Foley artist.
I'm the Foley artist.
So this is the Bug Farm. And the description that I found was a large, complex blend of cultures to emulate sour beers such as lambic-style ales. Can you copy and paste any more from the Weiss description? Okay.
Hey, easy.
Over time displays a citrus sourness and a large barnyard profile.
That describes Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah. I knew a girl with a large barnyard profile.
That's right. Took her to the prom.
It says the Bug Farm blend changes every year, the Sadie Hawkins dance, and can be added at any stage of fermentation. Oh, so you could do it at primary or secondary or I guess bottling as well. I don't know if you were careful. But okay, so you've had your sip.
I've had my sip.
This doesn't smell as dark and funky as the previous one.
Nope.
Ooh.
That was my reaction, too.
Yeah.
If you could see that, you would know what I was talking
Excuse
about.
Excuse me while I salivate across the room.
Wow. This, to me, is as close to the Lafleur.
In the level of sourness.
Level of sourness, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one definitely had the level of acidity that I was really looking for. It also, I don't know, to me, in the short amount of time that it was in the carboy, the Bug Farm was the one that I thought could really stand alone as a sour beer. I mean, Steven and I, Steven from Newber Thursday, we blended most of these beers into like the final blend, which I believe you have a bottle of.
That's the big bottle.
Yes, it is. Out of all of the beers that because of course we tasted them along the way and we were, you know, doing various variations on the blend. And that was the only one where we were like, yeah, I could just bottle this one by itself and be happy with it.
I quite like this.
Yeah, it tastes, even though it doesn't appear to be highly carbonated, it tastes effervescent, probably because of the acidity of the tartness. You know, whenever you have a highly carbonated drink, that carbonic acid, I guess is what it is,
yeah.
Is, you know, kind of acidic and, well, being an acid, it would be. but then again, there's some there is some interesting, you know, funky characters in there, mm-hmm. as well. Now, this beer does not have the malt backbone that La Folie has.
No.
I guess, Matt, you designed this not to have an interesting malt backbone because you wanted to show off the yeast.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it was really more inspired by, the Belgian style gooses, really. I mean, obviously, you know, I didn't do, you know, your crazy, you know, turbid mashing or cool shipping or anything like that. But I wanted to just keep it very simple, have a little bit of variety in the malt bill just to give the, like I said, the bugs a little bit of variety of stuff to chew on. But besides that, no, I wanted just all yeast. And I think I did pretty well.
Yeah, you did very well. Yeah.
No, I like this beer.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, that's I think I've been in contact with the East Coast yeast people.
Al.
And I wanted to do a show, and they're like, no, we can't afford the publicity. We can't. Because they're making the stuff as fast as they can, I guess. And
yeah, it's only available at one homebrew store, and there's an email list that you can get on, and it's very much like we have the yeast, and then 5 minutes later, it's like, well, list is all full.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and it's really cool. I mean, he does a really great variety of yeasts. I mean, he does a Flemish red blend that I actually have in a carboy right now. I did that one side by side with Y-Yeast's Roselaire, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. He also has a Saison blend. He has a Brettanomyces Saison blend. A couple of his strains are actually – he found in a yeast bank that were originally from Ballantine, of all places. Yeah. So really, really interesting stuff. So definitely knows what he's doing.
Now, on these beers, how did you handle aeration?
I did not aerate at all. Normally I use pure oxygen, welding tank, oxygen stone, that kind of thing. But, I didn't aerate at all. I literally just racked from my kettle into the carboy, pitched the yeast and put it in my closet and forgot about it. So,
wow.
Wow.
I'm going to have a buttery smooth cracker after this, I think, because that's just, wow. I'm enjoying it, but it is aggressive.
Yeah, it is. It's like making that with a Sour Patch Kid.
I knew a girl once that was like, making that with a Sour
Patch Kid. I'm trying to make a joke that combines Pediococcus with pedophile.
I think you've officially earned your first explicit tag.
Run, Forrest, run! Okay. All right, we're getting silly.
Yeah, now we're okay. Yeah, should we? I'm going to save this. I'm not going to rinse this. I'm going to save the little bit. Get another great value cup there, and let's go to the. And I am going to eat a cracker because. That is an aggressive.
Did you guys have the blend chill? Did you want to do that one too, or?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got your dreg one coming up, but I don't know. I'd kind of like to save that one for a special occasion.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
If that won't hurt your feelings, Matt. I mean, I think.
Oh, no, that's fine. It's just, you know, just thought it would be, you know, an interesting, like, this is the final product of, you know, putting all these flavors together, especially because, I mean, the blending process was really interesting. Just the way that, you know, you would say, well, I'm going to add more of the Bug Farm version to add acidity, and then it would just radically change the final blend, you know? So.
Well, geez, I would like, it is a big beer, though.
It is, yes. It would definitely be the end of your night.
What do you think, Steve? He's tempted. Let's drink the Dreg one.
Let's drink the Dreg.
Okay.
Okay, now we're down to the we've eaten our buttery smooth crackers.
Okay, so I'm drinking the...
Ooh.
This is...
Now, when we opened number D, we noticed a distinct plasticky...
I was just going to say that. Mm-hmm. I was going to say polyethylene or something.
Yeah, so... I don't know exactly what happened with this one. Like I said, it was a fun day making the starter. But I think there was something that got in there that wasn't supposed to be in there.
There's a bit of diesel.
Yeah.
It's familiar.
It is a little like lighter
There's
fluid.
There's a little lighter fluid going on in there.
Yeah. <I think so.
laughs> Any No Time for Sergeants fans out there?
Ben?
Hello?
Okay. Matt,
okay. I'm guessing that, you know, we got to the fifth or sixth bottle that, you know, we opened that day, and, you know, we didn't quite flame the tip of the bottle well enough, so,
well,
you
know. But you're dealing with the dregs of a lot of different sour beers. But it does smell like my dad's Zippo.
Wasn't your dad Zippo in the Barnum and Bailey Circus once? Or is that Zippo? No, wait.
Is that a U-boat?
Is that a U-boat?
That's not my boat.
It's not on my boat. I get a lot of fruit. I get a lot of pineapple, a lot of like mango-y
stuff.
In
the flavor?
In the nose.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Behind the lighter fluid.
Do you get your mango at the dumpster?
Well...
I guess. Now you guys are starting to make me feel bad.
I get it. It really isn't that.
I'm kidding. But there is sort of a fuel aroma to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that's one thing is I don't know if that is a result of, like I said, something that got in there that wasn't supposed to, or if it was the fact that because I put this one on my stir plate, this was really the only one that had any kind of extra oxygen added to it. So I don't know if that made a difference or, you know, what. I think that's a Michael Tonsmar question right there, but, you know.
He would know.
He would, yes.
In fact, he's thinking of it now. He doesn't know why.
I can imagine like a dude watching Jeopardy yelling at his screen, like, you know, it's like, it's because you put it on the stir plate, you know.
It doesn't taste bad.
No.
It's tart. But it's not as complex as the Bug Farm one. You know, the Bug Farm one had some balance and depth and complexity and was really kind of interesting. You could kind of explore down in there the different flavors. It was kind of multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
And this one... not so much. And maybe, well, I'm not, this is not an insult to you, Matt, because I think the beer was brewed well. It's just that you took, it's kind of like mixing all the colors together in the watercolor kit.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason to, you know, producing this whatsoever. Like I said, it was really more of just, you know, I need something for the fourth carboy, so let's do this, you know. Right. And the other question, the other thing, too, is I also don't know if, you know, because when you get dregs off the bottom of a bottle, you don't know if it's the bugs that are in there, if it's just a strain that they use specifically for bottling. I mean, I might have just, you know, pitched a bunch of champagne yeast in there, you know.
Mm. Well, it's sour. I mean, there's some funkiness in there.
Yeah, there's definitely some stuff that got in there. It's just, like I said, it was so, like, shot in the dark as far as what went in there, you know.
Well, I definitely applaud your attempt, I guess. And you know, this is another argument for small batches is because you didn't make 10 gallons of this, and it's well worth the experiment, you know.
That's exactly it. That was the idea, and, you know, small batches for the win.
Hmm. I think we got to open the big one now.
Yeah, we do. I went back to the Bug Farm as my
to wash your palate off.
Well, that's my comparison. And your comments, James, I think are dead on. That the bug farm is more complex. Mm. It's both more bold. It's like more in your face, but it's also more subtle because it's got a lot more layers, a lot more stuff going on. Yeah. So there you go.
Do you want to rinse that?
Yeah.
So we will open the big one.
Alrighty. Let's do it.
Yeah, I was gonna save that, but you know, but like I said, the big day never comes.
And I'll tell you what, if you like it that much, then I'll go ahead and send you another one.
Ooh.
You can have one that you can hang on to.
Well, we definitely have it to have it.
After promoting my podcast as much as you have today, then I owe you that.
Now, there's some interesting residue on the top of that one. What is that? It's a – oh, it's probably because it got upside down in the shipping or something.
Oh, I bet it is. Yeah.
Yeah, there also might be a little bit of residual Brett activity. That's one thing that I noticed when bottling the blend is all of them had little baby pellicles on top. So
now this one has some more carbonation than the others.
Yeah. Now, as far as the carbonation went, I when we did the blending, Steve and I bottled the individual beers straight off the carboy. It's actually funny because the first bottle that I racked off of each of them, I mean, the bottle was like a third sediment, you know, because I literally just stuck the auto siphon in there and just pulled off, you know, into each bottle. And I decided to save that to repitch, you know, in another beer later on down the road. But to carbonate those, I actually used just carb drops. They were the copper ton. The final blend, I actually did it right with priming sugar and, you know, in a bottling bucket and stuff like that. So,
oh, now that's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice beer.
I'm glad we opened it because this, I think, is my favorite of the, evening. I think it's not as sour or tart as the Bug Farm one.
Right.
But it is, to me, more kind of fruity and interesting than that one. What do you think?
I agree with you. I'm going to go back. I've still got my Bug Farm here.
Oh, I don't have mine.
Okay, so the Bug Farm's getting old. I mean, I mean, it's been out. It's been
oh, yeah, okay. It's know, been aired for, out
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, for a while. Now, this is the best beer.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is good.
And it's the carbonation. It's more carbonated
than
the others. And so the effervescence is kind of lifting some of the, you know, some of the kind of residue off the tongue, which carbonation is a flavor component.
You bet it is. I'd be mighty proud to have brewed this.
Very nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah, and honestly, the best thing about this was the blending session because this was the first time that I had really sat down and tried to do anything of this nature. It was really fascinating because, you know, Steve and I, we started off with, you know, just equal parts of each and tasted it. And it was okay, but it was a little on the bland side. It didn't have the acidity that we went for. And so we decided to add, you know, let's add a little bit more of the Bug Farm. And it was really surprising because it added more acidity, but a lot of the fruitiness just dropped off completely. And, you know, we ended up doing this, like, I think we ended up with four or five different permutations before we really settled on one that we liked a lot. And it was really interesting just how radically the flavor profile would change from blend to blend. So
do you remember what the final ratio was?
I believe it was one part of the now you're putting me to the task here. Dang.
Just make it up.
Oh, yeah. It was one part of the white labs, two parts of the Y yeast, two parts of the Bug Farm, and two parts of the house blend. So,
Interesting. Now, I'm not getting any of the kind of Zippo characteristics.
No, I'm not
at all. No. With this.
Yeah, I'm wondering how it's going to develop because honestly, I think that had something to do with bottling the individual bottles because when we did the blending, I didn't get any of that at all from the house blend. So, it's funny because when we blended it. The house blend seemed to be kind of in between the Bug Farm and the White Labs, as far as it had that same kind of, like you said, pineapple-y mango fruitiness, but it also had more tartness, but it wasn't quite as sour as the Bug Farm. So it was kind of that like happy medium, I guess you could say. So yeah, it didn't smell like my dad's Zippo.
That's a shirt.
Well, of the five beers that we've had tonight, this one is, and I mean, it's balanced. It's got you know, it's got great characteristics that you would expect in any kind of well-made sour beer. It's not over the top in any one direction, in my opinion, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not blasting you out like a, you know, eating a bunch of sour Skittles. And on the other hand, it's not so dang funky that you just kind of, you know, repel against it for a while. So, and it's got some really nice fruitiness, which is nice. And so it's refreshing. Good job.
Yeah, and La Folie is also a blended beer.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen the fooders that the thing is fermented in or aged in, and they do blend it. So what you get is not the product from one of those tanks. It's like an intelligent decision that this is the beer, the way the beer should taste. So,
you know, to be honest, I think the one thing that I learned the most from this whole experiment is how absolutely essential blending is to the production of sour beers. You know, like I said, the Bug Farm, you know, that one I would have bottled and, you know, handed out to friends, whatever. But, you know, then I would have had, you know, 2.5 gallons of something decent and, you know, the rest of it I would have probably, you know, thrown away or whatever. But the fact that, you know, I blended them, I think I ended up getting rid of like 0.5 gallon of beer, and I used all the rest of it. So, you know, the fact that blending was so essential to, you know, really finding that balance of, you know, tartness and funk and, you know, fruitiness, et cetera, yeah. That was a big lesson I came around with. I don't think that I would try doing, you know, just 5 gallons of a blonde sour and just kind of seeing where it went at this point.
And to me, this is more drinkable than the Bug Farm. I mean, the Bug Farm was so aggressive that it left a residue, and I had to have a cracker.
Yeah.
After just half a glass.
Yeah, it's like a beer that you'd really have to have food with.
Exactly.
Which would be fine.
Yeah.
And we drink a lot of sour beers. So even for us, it was like, well, I want something to eat with this. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for sending this to us and sharing this with us.
Hey, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be on the show. I've been listening to the show for a long time. You've been a big inspiration for me, so thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you. And you guys, the New Brew Thursday, I have to admit, I don't listen to or watch a lot of beer podcasts because to me it's kind of like work.
Yeah.
But you guys have one of, if not the best produced video podcast out there. I mean, you know, the production values are really good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We owe that almost completely to John Holzer. He handles the editing and all the graphics, and that's all his baby. So, you know, big ups to John Holzer.
Well, this is the mutual respect society here, but so this is your turn to say any last words. I mean, if anything that we did not cover in the show on making these beers and making this blend,
not really. You know, make small batches and experiment, and that's it's fun and brew more beer, I guess. Yeah, no, I got nothing.
Well, we greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. It was fun.
It's very nice, very inspirational, and play with your beer.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Matt for the tasty beers. That was a great experiment. Be sure to check out the New Brew Thursday podcasts and the audio episode that's coming up before long that has them tasting the same thing. So it'd be interesting to see how similar or different our perceptions were. And I hope I didn't bruise Matt's ego too much with the comments about the Zippo thing. And of course, thanks to Steve for joining me in the studio. We always have a lot of fun. And I'm all apologetic this morning. I feel compelled to say that there is absolutely nothing funny about pedophilia in real life. It's just when Steve was talking about kissing a Sour Patch Kid, which is a candy, by the way, I couldn't resist the little tipsy wordplay there. So I hope that you take that in the spirit in which it was intended. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And please check your spam filter if you've written me and haven't heard from me, because you might have heard from me and you maybe don't know it. I've been getting emails lately from a couple of folks that are like, hey, you didn't answer my email. And I was like, yeah, I did answer your email. Anyway, be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is now available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online at our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are 14-carat white gold 6-prong round diamond engagement ring with channel set baguette and princess cut diamond. Woohoo! Congratulations. Best wishes. Hope that the ring does the trick. And Peter's walking rabbit jacket. I've seen everything now. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through our associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson, our buddy in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.